If you text Press Row to 727272, you get a free one-night game rental from Redbox. You know, video games are super fun and they're super expensive. And once you bust open that plastic, you're stuck with them. And that's why Redbox lets you try out the hottest new games risk-free. Right now, you can rent Middle Earth, Shadow of War, Destiny 2, NBA 2K18, and more. So just text Press Row to 727272 for a free one-night game rental. Redbox, the smarter way to watch and play. The offer expires December 31st, 2017, subject to additional terms. Charges apply for additional nights. Payment card required. If you're not in Text Club, Redbox will send you an additional text with an invite to join their recurring alerts. Message and data rates may apply. For terms, visit redbox.com/textclub. And for the privacy policy, visit redbox.com/privacy.
This episode of the Press Row Podcast is also brought to you by Out of the Park Developments, makers of Out of the Park Baseball 18, Franchise Hockey Manager 4, and MLB Manager 2017. Every single Wednesday night is Out of the Park night around the world. We're at 8 p.m. Eastern. Our man Snaggle J does an hour of Out of the Park 18, followed by 9 p.m. TJ Lyman, that sports gamer, live streaming an hour of Out of the Park 18, and followed up at 10 p.m. Eastern with Jeff and Adam doing Franchise Hockey Manager 4 stuff. It's 3 hours every Wednesday of all kinds of great Out of the Park Developments content. And if you're not able to be there live on Wednesday nights, that's fine, because we archive everything to our YouTube page. So Wednesday night, starting at 8 p.m. on twitch.tv/OOTP Developments, 8 p.m., 9 p.m., and 10 p.m. with 2 hours of Out of the Park 18 and 1 hour of Franchise Hockey Manager 4. And then every day after that, backed up to our youtube.com/OOTP Developments. Check it all out. We have a lot of fun. We have a great community. You can learn a lot about our games, and you can see some other interesting ways to play them too. Thanks, and enjoy the show.
Well, after taking last week's episode to discuss news on a few upcoming games and the release of the impressive Xbox One X, we have to go back to the business side of things for this episode of the Press Row Podcast. Despite sports games dominating the sales charts, publishers and developers are looking towards a future that relies even more so on digital revenue than they do now, and also subscription-based models. We're going to talk about what that means for the sports gaming genre and the inherent advantages and disadvantages with both business and consumer considerations in mind. First, though, I'm here once again with Rich Gresham. Rich, what have you been up to? What have you been playing the last week since we chatted? Anything new you've got for us?
Well, I was flying back and forth from East Coast to West Coast this week, so not a lot of console gaming, although I do continue to play the same sort of treadmill games. Today I was able to hop on the treadmill for 3 miles and got in another game of NHL and then Pro Evolution. I know I've talked about it. NHL is a fun game. It's better now. They made a couple updates than it was when I first started playing it, but now I'm sort of back in a position where I have a move or two that I can use to score goals. And I'm just playing against a computer, just playing through a franchise and playing on the treadmill, right? So I'm not looking for some sort of a massive difficulty level or anything like that. But for a while, when I first started, I was winning games by a lot. And then there was an update and I was winning games by a little bit. I don't even lose a game now and then. And now I'm back to winning every game. It's not like 8-0 or something, anything like that, but it's like 6-3, 5-2, those kind of scores. So I was able to get that in today. But I'm continuing to have fun with NHL. Mm-hmm. It's quite good. And as I said before, I don't know whether it's because I kind of took a few years off is not quite right. But for the last couple of years, I played much less NHL than I had in the past. I used to play it religiously almost every week. So, almost every year. So playing some NHL, played a little Pro Evolution, of course. My season continues. I think I might have said last week that I was pretty much dominating. Well, I should keep my big fat mouth shut because I'm playing in the round of 32 in the Europa League with Everton, and I lost 2-0 in the first of a 2-leg series. So if I don't win by 3 goals or more at home, which for me is that's not guaranteed by any stretch, then I'll be booted out of the Europa League. What I was hoping to do this year was win the Premier League, the Europa, and the FA Cup, right? Which would be a treble of sorts. You know, the Europa is the competition below the Champions League. And then next year I would be in the Champions League. I would want to win the Premier League, the Champions League, and then the FA Cup again. That's sort of like, if I do that, I'll pretty much be able to put it down. I mean, there's not anything more I can do with that. But yeah, unless I win 3-0 a week from now in the virtual week, I'll be bounced from the Europa. So that's not fun.
It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. Something else I've been playing, Brian, that I wanted to mention is I finally got NBA 2K18.
Which system?
PlayStation 4.
Okay. Didn't go with the Switch?
No, I did not go with the Switch. NBA 2K18 is, for me, a big screen TV, best version possible kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And I got it digitally sitting here on my PlayStation 4. I love digital, right? Just being able to go back and forth from Pro Evo to NHL to NBA 2K18 is great, just without having to swap discs and stuff like that. It's on my PlayStation 4, and it's really good. I've only played a few games. I started a MyGM with the Washington Wizards because they're fun to play with, but you know, it's not like cheating and taking the LeBron James Cavaliers. But I didn't go with the Nets because I won the title with the Nets a couple of years ago. And I just want to kind of play with someone different. So I'm the Wizards and played a few games. Got my butt handed to me the first game. Played a lot better the second game. The controls are different again this year.
As always.
The play calling, I still don't know how to call plays. Now, I know that's a simple Google search or a, you know, pause button, options, look at controllers. I get that. But the fact is I pressed every single button. I pressed the D-pad, I pressed all of the buttons, and I pressed all of the triggers, and there's no way to see that play call comes up. So I have to research that. I know, again, I could find it in 10 seconds. But regardless, it's great. Like, it's just great to play this game. You know, it's interesting. Once the sort of the offensive AI kicks in, you know, you bring it down the court, and at least my experience is I bring it down the court in the hands of my point guard, typically John Wall, and if I just bring it to the top of the key and stand there, everyone sort of stands there and looks at me. So like, it's obviously, like, I guess, sort of, at least with the Wizards, in isolation. But then as soon as I pass it to my shooting guard or anyone else, all of a sudden, boom, everybody starts running and the offense starts kicking, and you know, guys are doing different things, and then I'll typically try to execute like a pick and roll, and it's just a lot of fun to do that. It's really, really interesting to do that. And so I played, you know, a handful of games, and I'm losing more than I'm winning, but I'm enjoying it. It's just a great game. I've scratched the surface. I don't know that I'm going to play any other mode. This is just what I think I feel like I'm going to do. But I'm really enjoying what I played so far. Mm-hmm. I also dabbled in FIFA Mobile because, as I mentioned, for the most of this week, I have been either on an airplane or in San Francisco. I'm now back home. And I haven't played a lot of it, an hour or so. But I've never played a FIFA Mobile or never played a Madden Mobile before now. It just was never really my thing. And I don't know if I'm going to play it a lot. It's quite impressive in a lot of ways. It's quite dense. It's all Ultimate Team based. Mm-hmm. But it's also very well handles very quick, brief mobile like training and challenge experiences very well. The controls start off being pretty much all touch control. But then as you go on, it gives you the opportunity to use a virtual stick and buttons for passing and shooting and stuff. I just don't like playing these kinds of games on a mobile device. I'm just not comfortable. It's probably better on an iPad, but still just having to hold my phone and, you know, sort of press the virtual stick in a direction and then swipe. I'm constantly like, you know, I'm blocking parts of the screen that I want to see and stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, you know, and it's Ultimate Team, and it makes it really easy to sort of figure out what to do at the beginning, but you can just see in the background all the different things. There's like different currencies, there's coins, there's lightning bolts, and there's XP, right? So there's like three or four different currencies / whatever, you know, economies that are going on. You know, you have to build up a team, increase your overall. You know, you get to sort of play various ways, you know, small little challenges. You can then sort of play against people, but it appears to be asynchronous. And you're really just sort of, at least in one of these things, that they're very short and you're sort of playing against somebody, but you're not playing against somebody. You're both just sort of going through the same set of circumstances on your own, and sort of whoever converts more wins, but you're not seeing what they're doing. They're not seeing what you're doing, but you're sort of seeing at the top. It's sort of letting you know in text over by their name in the scoreboard sort of what's going on. Like I'll say, oh, they lost possession or who scored a goal. So I'll say this. The FIFA mobile game is very impressive. I don't know if I'm going to like it, love it, or ignore it. But it's worth checking out. There's absolutely no harm in downloading this free game and playing it because I didn't even mention it's free. And
well, it's hugely popular. And
yeah.
What I find interesting about it is that FIFA mobile is hugely popular, but so is Pro Evolution Mobile. Which is fairly new to the market, but that game has been doing really well for Konami, and it's interesting that two games can coexist so strongly, but you're also looking at a much bigger potential user base
and zero barrier to entry.
Right.
Free. I mean, that's the biggest thing. If something is free and you have any interest in it, I mean, what's the harm in checking it out? And clearly a lot of people are. You know, it's funny, as soon as I downloaded FIFA on, and it wasn't in the game, but like I downloaded it from, I guess, iTunes, and right below it immediately it popped up Pro Evolution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, download this, and I didn't yet, but I saw that. I was like, huh, interesting, because I didn't realize Pro Evo, and there's a couple different Pro Evo. There's like the Pro Evo regular game mobile version, then there's also like the Pro Evo card manager. You know, there's a separate, so there's a couple of those things going on, which I may or may not check out. I mean, again, I generally speaking don't play mobile games on my phone. I'm generally emailing, tweeting, texting, otherwise, you know, or checking scores or whatever, or watching. I watch a lot of hockey and soccer and baseball on my phone as well. So I don't generally game on it because when I'm on my phone, I tend to want to do those other things. But it's interesting. It's interesting. And again, visually, very impressive, no doubt.
Yeah, I just don't have a whole lot of interest in mobile gaming either, just because when I do have time to waste, I tend to do some task-oriented stuff or read Twitter. You're right, same kind of thing. So, but it is kind of fascinating because the Pro Evolution thing, I mean, if it does well there, and it kind of ties into what we're talking about in this episode as far as making money through monetization tactics and on mobile, that's where it all kind of began.
And, absolutely.
And with the success of it there, and if it continues to grow, and the cost that's required for them to continue to make the console version, and Konami having already shown an inclination to dump console for mobile games or mobile gambling, that you know, it's not outside the realm of possibility that happens within the next couple of years.
Hey, everybody, we're going to take just a moment here to thank our sponsor this week, Redbox. You know, everybody knows that Redbox is about renting movies and video games for cheap. But did you know that Redbox also sells used games starting as low as $4.99? So for the price of one of those extra large caramel frap, double espresso, no foam, two foam drinkity drinks that you love, and you know you do, you could start the most legendary game night tradition ever, playing your hearts out all the way up till bedtime for way less than you'd pay in store. You can keep your kids quietly entertained all month long. I know something about that. So that you can practice that extremely complex and extremely painful yoga pose and get it down to perfection so that you can impress your entire class with your superhuman flexibility. Yeah, of course, because that's what I do. That's right. Buying games for Redbox is a way cheaper option, and this time you keep them forever. So right now, Doom, Dark Souls 3, Madden NFL 17 are all for sale. So head over to the box and do game night on the cheap. Redbox, the smarter way to watch and play.
But yeah, let's get into this then, Rich, because I want to talk. We'll start with the sales numbers. Well, not necessarily the sales numbers, but their ranking in the entirety of the industry, right?
Yes.
So we have the October sales charts came out today.
Yes.
And what did they tell you, Rich?
They told me that sports games, these games that we love, that we, and I say we, I don't mean just you and me, Brian, but I mean everybody in the Press Row podcast community, right? And you know, the Pasta Padre and Operation Sports, Hit the Pass, all the different places where people gather. We are a big deal. I mean, half of the games are sports games. It's, you know, it's Madden. It's obviously NBA, which is its own amazing sales story, not just in the month, but in the year and in the 12-month rolling, just amazing stuff. But it's NBA, it's FIFA, it's Madden, it's WWE, and it's Forza. Those five games are in half of the top 10. Now, they're not number 1 through 4, but they are 5 through 8 and then 10. And then, by the way, at 11 is Gran Turismo Sport. So that's another one. So it tells you that we're a big deal, and that's awesome. And it also, you know, there's a lot of stuff we're going to talk about that will have, you know, either negative potential, you know, connotations or cynical or whatever. But it also tells you that they're good games or great games, because the rest of the games in the NPD are great games. And people who spend significant money on video games tend to be pretty smart about that. And if all of these games were not enjoyable to a lot of people, and I consider myself as one of those people, then they wouldn't be in the top 10.
Well, it's, so and they're steady, right? This is not unusual for these games to be in the top 10. And at the end of the year, you'll see NBA 2K18, you'll see Madden 18 in the top five for the entire 2017. And you'll see FIFA just outside of that, because it's not as strong in North America. When we talk NPD, that's just North America.
Right.
It's massive when you're looking at the entire globe.
Yes.
But in North America, it's continued to grow. And then you're going to also have NHL outside, probably in the top 20. NBA Live won't be there. But there's so much consistency with these games that you can count on them year to year to be right there. So, Rich, why then is so much emphasis being put on we have to change the way we sell the games, we have to change the way we make money out of the games when they're doing so well year to year? These games aren't being built from the ground up and releasing every other year or every 3 years like you see from most AAA type games.
Well, from a sports game perspective, they're not changing. They're evolving. Sports games have led the way. You know, like it or like microtransactions or not, FIFA started this whole thing. And we've had Matt Pryor, who is a producer at EA, on this show and on the previous version of this show multiple times. He is the guy who initially created Ultimate Team in FIFA a while ago. I don't know if it's more than 10 years now. But then after a couple, 2 or 3 years, you know, Madden got on the train, and then obviously everybody else in the EA Sports world. And and NBA 2K with its VC has been a thing for years. It's not new. They just continue to modify the formula. So I wouldn't say they're changing. I would just say they're modifying. And frankly, it feels to me like the EA games and the NBA 2K games, it's just about adjustments, right? Adjustments in multiple directions. And we're going to talk more about other adjustments that people are making, like obviously Star Wars Battlefront, right? So I think it's unfair to use the word change, but clearly, yes, they're making money. That's great. These games are wildly expensive to produce. You know, they're all licensed games, and playing in the big leagues and licensing the big league boys is a very expensive proposition. Now, there are obviously other games that have licenses as well that are expensive, but I believe the sports ones are the most. And so, you know, that's why these games cost a ton of money to license. I didn't even mention, and I'll mention it now, you know, the technology to develop these games continues to get significantly more expensive. This is not a excuse. Like, last week we talked about the Xbox One X with, you know, additional visuals and art assets and stuff. Like, the tools that get developed that you have to pay for to use to make these games, to take advantage of the more processing power, are wildly expensive. The people that you have to pay that know how to do this stuff are wildly expensive. I would not be surprised if it's five times more expensive to make Madden in 2017 than it was in 2012. You know, it's probably more like 10 to 15. And that's another thing, right? So obviously, we know that EA is printing money off of Ultimate Team because they have to give some sort of representation about that in their annual reports. They're going to make over $1 billion this year. They were at, what was it, 700, 800 million last year?
Yeah, we're getting close to $1 billion.
It's got
to
be $1 billion. Yeah,
digital earnings, yeah.
Right? So So you have those two reasons. Number one, they're super expensive to produce, and we know that they're good, right? Because again, if they weren't good, they wouldn't be in the top 10. And you know, they're driving big profits, and they're just looking to figure it out more. Now, I don't subscribe to the theory that the EAs and the Take-Twos are looking to gouge their customers. I do not. I look at it as they are looking to make their customers so happy that they will spend a lot of money. And I think that's a good thing. And I think if that's not what you're trying to do when you're making sports video games, you're missing the mark. And I think that by and large, if they didn't delight their customers, these games wouldn't be in the top 10. So, you know, I don't subscribe to any sort of, you know, evil trying to gouge your customers. I think all these guys are trying to make sure that their fans, the right number of fans, buy their games and spend more money on their games so that they can keep on making those investments.
So, yeah, I agree that ideally that's what they would like. Well, we've seen multiple examples here recently, and we'll talk about that in a bit, of where it seems that publishers misjudged their consumers.
Yeah. You can get it. You can definitely get it wrong.
Yeah. So yeah, adjustments continue to be made. And we'll get into that in a bit. But I want to just continue kind of down this path, Rich, and ask, okay, if they're making nearly $1 billion digitally on these games already, right, and they release them every year, why do we have, for example, Andrew Wilson, CEO of EA, talking about the sports games sometime in the future becoming a subscription service?
Well, for the same reason, Brian, that you and I talked about it 3, 4, and 5 years ago. We know it's coming. I thought it would have been here by now. To a small degree, it is. Or maybe not small, like, you know, because to some degree, EA Access is that, right? It's an all-digital, and you get just, you know, refreshed versions of the sports games every single year, and you just pay a flat fee.
Yeah, you're just not getting them on day one.
Well, no, you do get them on day one. You get them actually before day one, and you get 10 hours with them, and then they go in the vault, you know, 6, 9 months later.
Yeah,
right. It's like you get them early, and then if you want to wait, you wait. It's interesting, and probably pretty darn effective, because I know it worked for me. I didn't actually wind up buying FIFA last year on Xbox One, but I wound up playing it early, and then when it was in the vault, I wound up playing like 3 seasons of Everton on. So, I'm actually surprised. Just because EA and NBA 2K have it almost both ways, in that they're not a, you know, either free to play entry or a pay once, like Overwatch, right, where you pay once and then you're in, or free to play, like, you know, the most famous PC games like League of Legends and Dota. They actually get you to pay $60 a year every year, plus get the digital revenue. Mm-hmm. So they actually get it both ways. And the sports games are really the only ones that can do that. And they do it every year, right? You know, you might be able, like Destiny gets away with it once every 2 to 3 years with Destiny and Destiny 2, right? But underlying both of those titles is the same meta architecture, right? So it really is a similar thing, right? So I would hold on to this as long as I possibly could. Well, predict its demise. You know, I find that interesting.
It goes back to a discussion we've had multiple times with NBA Live, for example, which is, would EA make more money by giving NBA Live away and then people playing the game and spending money in like the ultimate team mode than they would having that gate in the way of $60 or $40 or whatever you can buy the game for, where people are hesitant to put their money into that series, into that property, and then you lose out on anything you could get for them. So that's kind of what we've seen from EA Access already, which is, well, come February, come April,
yep,
whatever it be,
yep.
Now you can have it for free. Now you might.
Well, not for free, but as part of your paid service.
Right, essentially.
Yep.
I mean, you're not thinking about it as paying for NBA Live.
Right.
So then you potentially hook people into the ecosystem, and maybe they like the game and buy the next one. And so how the subscription would have to work, it's interesting to me, because do you see this as an EA-wide subscription or a specific game like a Madden subscription?
Oh, I think it's EA all the way. because you'll find the right mix, right? Because EA Access is sports heavy, but there's a lot of other good stuff in there too. And I think EA would be smart to promote their enterprise brand as opposed to just a specific brand, because it just opens the doors for a lot more people. And I'm actually a perfect target for that, right? Because I play a lot of the games that were on EA Access. Like, I enjoyed a couple of the Need for Speeds. I love their Plants vs. Zombies that are on there, obviously, which are old but still fun to play. I played a bunch of Star Wars Battlefront, the original, when it came out on that, on EA Access. I think I played the full 10 hours. So there's a bunch of other stuff in there too. So I'm thinking that it is a broader subscription, but I'm also thinking that there will continue to be, on a seasonal level, no matter what, some sort of, all right, here's the new version of the thing. Now, it may not be the $60 annual release, although, again, I think they'll hold on to that as long as they can. And as long as the market says that that's what, you know, enough people are willing to pay to get, you know, quote unquote, Madden 22 or Madden 24, right? You know, then that's it. But definitely, just, you don't want to give it away because it devalues the brand. And I also think, contractually, I don't think EA would have been able to give it away. But as you mentioned, through EA Access, they at least were able to get that, a very close version of that, in the hands of however many people subscribe to EA Access. I'd be fascinated to know how their Ultimate Team numbers were. They didn't break them out at all, right? In any of their in any of their shareholder reports that I remember. So
not yet, no.
I think it's just going to continue to evolve. Like, you know, not only we never really talk about it, but they've also got Origin Access on PC, you know, and Origin, while it not being Steam, Origin is a big deal. And so that's another, you know, and plenty of people play PC games, you know, and sports games on PC. So something else that you know, is part of what I think it's going to be broad. I think it's going to be EA Access is just going to continue to evolve. And as long as you get people to pay for that overall subscription, that is going to drive, I think, you know, the continued tweaking and alterations of the day one pricing and the gold ultimate team pricing and all the different things every time the new season version of a particular game comes out.
So, yeah, you mentioned the idea that they still kind of have to ramp up to a quote unquote release every year, even under subscription. And I agree with that. I think they have to capitalize on excitement, build up to that, and kind of make a spectacle out of it. Now, they do this already with the mobile games, the free-to-play mobile games, where a new season, they call it a new season of NBA Live Mobile has launched, and a new season of FIFA Mobile has launched, and so on. Now, what they do there, I believe, at least it used to be, I haven't checked what happens this year, but for these Ultimate Team-based games, is they essentially would wipe them and start you over. Maybe that's not the case anymore, but I haven't played them this year. But they would wipe you and start you over. And so I go back to this idea, as far as Ultimate Team on the consoles, of would they be able, under a subscription where somebody wasn't paying $60 to buy the new edition of the game, would they be able to get away with starting everybody from scratch again in Ultimate Team? Because this is how they make money. This is how they make the money, is by making everybody start over. It's why you can't carry over your character in NBA 2K, because they want you to start at a low number and have to work your way up. And it's why you can't carry over your Ultimate Team from one year to the next, because they want you to have to start from the ground up again. It's how they make the most money. So how do they do that under a subscription, Rich?
Got to be the same way, right? New season, new guys, you know, or you might have different competitions, right? Like, you might be able to keep your, you know, your team from 3, 4, 5 years ago, but it might not be available to participate in the, you know, the current season, right? Or the different tier or whatever, right? So you don't necessarily lose it, but, you know, as new competitions evolve, you know, you have to, you know, use teams that are eligible for those. And maybe you sort of get some credit, obviously, for what you're doing, but maybe you still have to sort of, you know, draft new players or things like that. There's all sorts of different ways that you can handle that. I think it begs to question a few things. Like, number one, I have paid EA a lot of money over the last 10 or 20 years. I mean, EA Access, the last 3-4 years, most of their sports games, the last 20 years before that, mm-hmm. if not. I'm playing FIFA Mobile right now. I know underneath the covers there's probably 150 different systems that make all that stuff work, but it would be good to have a single identity across all of those platforms, and then B, be rewarded for the history that I have in these kinds of modes, like building up the rewards, right? It's marketing 101, but it's important because it works, right? You know, building up a reward system, making people who have been with you for a long time and or spent a lot of time with you and or spent a lot of money feel like VIPs and give them access. Like, that's all part of this too. You know, and their ability to make more of those connections across mobile and across console and across PC, you know, you continue to just make people happier and happier with their experience because it's more about them and more customized and stuff.
You know, I think about a subscription, and if you're talking about it like an EA Sports subscription or an EA subscription, and what games would benefit the most from that? And I think it's, or at least what would consumers from their angle, how would they benefit the most, or what games would they see that in? And I think it's anything not named FIFA and Madden, because all these smaller games now, these games that don't sell 5+ million copies a year, are kind of falling by the wayside, don't you think? Like the NHLs and the NBA Lives and any other offshoot game that EA might want to try, I think they could be helped by a subscription service where people don't have to spend the money, the $60 up front, because it's difficult to do when you're already buying one of the big three, or two of the big three, or three of the big three with Madden, FIFA, and NBA 2K. How do those games survive going forward, Rich, without a subscription that kind of almost subsidizes them, or at least it brings other people into them that maybe wouldn't have played them otherwise, which is something we've talked about again with EA Access as far as when these games hit and people having an opportunity to play them that wouldn't have otherwise.
Well, that's the thing, right? It's about evolution, right? We talked at the beginning, you know, I said it's not changing, it's an evolution. It may be more viable for NHL to be successful because of EA Access and other subscription services, because even if it's, and I don't know that they are or they not, I have no idea what unit sales are for NHL, but even if they are not what they were before, and I would believe that they're not, it feels to me like NHL sold more, but it was number 19 in the top 20 this month. Like, so it's charting, you know, you don't see NBA Live in there, for example. So, but it just becomes, it's a bigger picture discussion, right? If you're offering EA Access, which is access to all of our games across the platforms, right? Having an NBA game makes that platform more valuable to more people, right? And then maybe it even makes other things viable. UFC, right? May or may not have been a big seller. I don't know. But having more in your arsenal as part of a subscription service makes that subscription service more attractive and more valuable. And so that's also part of the picture.
Yeah, I think it could lead to more creativity also. Because what you've seen in recent years, obviously, you know, in the last decade, is they trimmed the games out that were either not conventional, so arcade-style games, or that simply had trouble selling or couldn't compete on the marketplace with another title, and you've seen those, you know, disappear. And would they maybe be able to justify developing a game that made their subscription service more interesting, with something unique, something that just adds some flair to the total package?
Something for kids, maybe?
Right, exactly. So I think that would be important for them, and it could lead to something new coming. And then obviously maybe it'd give them more incentive to say, hey, we should really get MLB back, or hey, we should, you know, go back to doing some arcade-style games. So I think that would be an interesting benefit from it. I know you feel like we're closer to it. I don't feel like we're close to this happening, this subscription thing taking over. I think we're still several years away.
Well, but I mean, to a degree, it's already here, right? Again, if we just take EA Access, what do I get with EA Access? I get every EA Sports game made for this generation, plus the access, early access to every new game when it comes out. That's a lot of the way there. And EA has said multiple times how successful this service is, right? They every time they talk about it, they describe how successful it is and how it's getting bigger and bigger, and that it's almost been an unexpected success. Like, this has been more, this has generated more revenue than they were expecting. So, you know, again, it just, it continues to prove that, that I think we are here. It's just the only difference between what EA Access offers and what I think Andrew Wilson was talking about is the fact that you don't just get the new game immediately and keep the new game. You get the new game immediately, but you don't keep it. Right, that's the only difference.
What's the reason and, though behind that? What's holding them back from doing that, Rich? Isn't
because,
it?
Because
yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, what's holding them back is two things. Number one, Sony doesn't have EA Access on there, right? So if you're going to do it, you got to be on at least that platform and potentially Nintendo, although they don't have the games, but I mean, you know, I'm thinking maybe in, you know, 2 to 3 years, okay, right? Because if the Switch and whatever comes after the Switch are successful, EA would be, I don't think it would be a good idea to ignore it. But, you know, who knows? They know better than me. But so that's the big holdup. Number one, they need to get it on Sony. And if they can get it on Sony, then that gives them the real opportunity to continue to change it, you know. But again, I don't think they do yet, just because there's no compelling event that's going to cause them to have to change that we know of, right? And I have to believe that as long as their contracts remain structured as they are, they don't have the ability to just say, we're not going to offer a new $60 game. But it's coming. He said it's coming. Andrew Wilson said it's coming. And I think it's good. I really think it's ultimately benefits people. Like, the way that I play these games, I would definitely get my money's worth. You know, what's interesting is what the game would be, because like FIFA Mobile doesn't let me just say I want to be Everton and play a season. Mm-hmm. FIFA's like, you're only getting to play Ultimate Team. Yeah. You know? And that's an aspect of maybe part of the subscription service. It may be, you know, you get Madden 17 Ultimate Team, but not the rest of Madden, right? That's another thing that could be part of that that would make this also happen sooner, because that's what the mobile game is. Well,
and that's almost what you see with Pro Evolution Soccer 2018, which just this week released their, for the third straight year, a free-to-play version, which includes their team-building mode and online competitive mode. But doesn't have, you know, it's franchise type mode or special, you know, more
right,
personalized options.
Right.
Doesn't have that stuff. You have to pay for that stuff. But I think you're missing one factor here and why we're not quite to the subscription solely based thing yet, Rich, and that's relationships with retailers and the still the necessity of selling games through retailers. We aren't at a digital place yet where, you know, the majority of people are buying digitally, or we're not, certainly not near anywhere 100%. People are still buying from GameStop. A lot of people are still buying from Best Buy and Amazon and Walmart. The sales there, they can't afford to lose them, and they can't afford to upset their retail partners, right? Because of that, they can't go too heavy on the digital side yet. I mean, the EA Access thing already kind of ticked them off a few years ago, and then they started selling EA Access codes in the stores to kind of make up for that. It's, I think, a very difficult thing for them to navigate right now as they try to transition towards this, Rich, but that they can't burn those bridges yet with retailers.
Right, and that's why it's a continued evolution. That's all this is. One thing we know for sure, Brian, is that EA Access is not going away. You know what I mean? Like, it's only going to get bigger and broader. That's what we know. It's here and it's here to stay. Retail is suffering terribly. You know, I worked retail for years. when I was younger and had the foot strength to do it, because that's a tough job on the legs, man. Working retail, did it for years. Retail is struggling mightily, but it remains a very vital channel. You know, you and I are lucky and blessed enough that we have high-speed internet and giant televisions and the ability, the purchasing power to get these consoles. There's lots and lots and lots of people across this country that do not have that. Mm-hmm. And like you say, their Walmart, their GameStop, and, you know, gives them the chance to get the one or two games a year that they're going to play. So you're right. That's absolutely vital. But that doesn't mean that you can't continue to invest heavily and make adjustments in your online subscriptions, because they're only going to get better. And, you know, you don't want to just think next year and the year after. You want to think 5 years, 10 years. You know, you want to think continuing to build value, build shareholder wealth. And, you know, 10 years from now, look at where we were 10 years ago as far as these kinds of things and games as a service overall and subscription services, like the fact that you could buy the Xbox One X and never buy a single physical disc. And you can, with the purchase of a couple different services, including Xbox Live Gold and EA Access and Xbox Games Pass, yep, have access to hundreds, if not thousands, great games, you know, at the press of a button on your controller. Like, it's going to continue to be bigger and bigger and bigger, and EA is in probably as good a position as anybody to maximize the value from that. So they're going to keep on doing that. But you're right. For the next 2, 4, 5 years, at a minimum, I can't see the annual release, $60 release, going anywhere. And I continue to see them putting these games on physical discs. You're totally right.
You know, one question I got on Twitter relates to kind of how these microtransactions are implemented and where resources go towards when developers are working on building out the game, the feature set, and where their priorities lie. And we've seen in recent years, I don't think they've abandoned necessarily certain areas of the game like franchise mode, but we've definitely seen them take a back seat to the money-making mode. So we've already heard from Rex Dixon with Madden, who has kind of hinted at the idea of them monetizing franchise mode in some way. Now, this is not a radical idea necessarily, depending on how they would do that, because if you look at NCAA football, we already had that in NCAA football over the years. We had the ability to buy boosts, optional stuff, to make your franchise easier or give you advantages, and that was just limited to offline. You couldn't do that stuff in online. But anyways, it's not a new idea necessarily, but it seems to be that if we hope for significant progress to be made in an area like franchise mode, that they're going to only do that if, and this doesn't mean it happens next year or even the year after, but if they don't have this vision of how to make money on it beyond just the game sale, which, as we talked about, may be going away in the future, that just one, you know, initial payment. Do you foresee this becoming a... We've already seen an NBA 2K where it kind of infects every area of the game, except for now their one franchise mode that doesn't deal with it. But do you see this becoming a bigger issue in EA's games? Or because EA has been able to kind of stay out of the madness in the last couple of years by keeping all of that stuff isolated to just a single mode?
Yeah, I would. This would be tough, because at what point then, if that were to happen, and again, it completely depends upon the level that we're talking about here, right? So, like, if you're talking about something that is, yeah, you know, for $5 extra for, you know, a month, will house your online league and allow you to very easily, you know, share your stuff and live stream and watch your friends' highlights. You know what I mean? Like, if you're offering something that is a premium service that makes a existing mode even more fun with your friends, that's different than okay, if you want to play franchise mode, you got to pay $5 a month, or, you know what I mean? Like, so it all depends on what that is, but no matter what, it's going to be tricky, because at a certain point, if you're monetizing everything, then you're like, well, what am I buying in the first place? Right? What am I actually getting for the $60 I'm paying you? Like, yeah. And that's where that would get tricky. I mean, and now's probably a good time to mention, you know, the Star Wars Battlefront thing, right? Like, that's that's the question, or that's one of the questions that has been asked as this game has rolled out. It's like, well, what am I actually getting to do for my $60? And because there were so many stories and experiences with microtransactions and loot boxes and how many hours you'd have to do something to get access to doing, like, you know, I'm aware of a lot of the stuff that's going on, but whenever you have a large amount of people wondering what they get for the $60, that's bad. You want it. You want people to know and feel great about what they're doing if they're spending $60 to get access to a game. So you don't want your fans asking them that question. Yeah. And that's where I start to worry if that thing happens. Yeah. But again, if you're talking about offering me $5 for a premium service that's going to make my online league experience even more fun, that's different than other things, right? So right. It depends on what it is.
So yeah, let me frame this next part of the discussion as we visit kind of where these things can go off the rails. So we've already discussed in great length, of course, NBA 2K18 and the backlash that it faced for it, the way it implements its virtual currency. There was also some blowback against Forza 7 and Shadow of War for their loot box type systems. But now we've kind of, that didn't stop there. It continued to grow and you can feel just kind of consumers kind of banding together on this issue and kind of, determining where the line is going to be drawn. And so now we've seen more recently Need for Speed Payback got hit hard in reviews, got hit hard by consumers, for its monetization. And then Star Wars Battlefront 2, which, as you mentioned, Rich, the backlash towards that game is monumental. I mean, like, beyond anything that could have been imagined, and largely led by organization by consumers through Reddit and other social media platforms. So what you have is a Need for Speed that Metacritic scored in the low 60s, and the Star Wars game, which is one of the most anticipated of the year, it's one of the biggest, if not the biggest IP possible for a video game, and there's a movie that's just a month away, so the excitement for this title could not have been bigger, and the expectations could not have been greater, and its Metacritic ends up in the low 70s. Now, We've also, going back to NBA 2K18, it was reviewed the lowest of any in the series in a decade, and we were kind of taken aback by the user score on Metacritic, which was below a 2. The Star Wars game, Rich, was below a 1. It's a 0.8 user score on Metacritic, which I looked at that and I didn't realize it could literally get that low. So what has gone wrong here with these games, Rich, or even if it's not necessarily what's gone wrong, what are people fighting against, and how are these developers trying to respond to it?
Well, I mean, when you say gone wrong, you mentioned the Shadow of War. That was number one on NPDs, and NBA 2K was number five. So those are, there's always conversations to be had about that. The Star Wars Battlefront 2 situation is much different. Very interesting. Very interesting example of in some cases, a savvy group of people making their feelings known in a way that wouldn't have been possible very long ago. And then it's one thing to be a vocal minority, and it's another thing to not be a vocal minority. And it would appear as the Star Wars Battlefront 2 this was not a vocal minority. This was a vocal majority. And, you know, I can't even follow it anymore. Or that's not true. I am following it. But I don't get super deep into the details about it. But, like, I saw Kat Bailey this week, and we were chatting about this, too. You know, she over at US Gamer, they've actually done a great job of detailing all of this stuff. And now the latest is that now they're not charging anything, basically, and it's, everything is through gameplay, which, frankly, I'm like, hey, if that's what you're going to do, that's pretty great, especially right before the game comes out. That was as good of a move as they could have made from a customer standpoint. So I found that to be very interesting as well, because these things are hard to get right. So that's what separates this. And it's just, like I said, it's just fascinating to see it happen. And hopefully it winds up being a good experience for everybody. And EA learns from it, and the next time they do this, they don't make what appear to be some of the same mistakes they made the first time.
You know, one of the things that interests me about this is that you have, like I mentioned, the IP, the Star Wars IP, and you have Disney overseeing that, and this bad kind of buzz going around where all that's being talked about is the video game and its poor reception and how it's teaching gambling to children, you know, things like this, and the pressure that Disney must have put on EA here to do something. I wonder how that compares to the pressure from a league that has given their license to a company, because we know they have influence and we know they approve and disapprove of almost they have the ability to do that on almost every decision that goes into the games, right, Rich?
Well, yes, but it's one thing to sort of say, here's the story and here are the characters and here's the visuals, here's the cutscenes. It's another thing for this kind of stuff, which, unless you're very savvy and familiar with them, might be difficult to understand. And who knows how those conversations were held. So I would love to be, you know, a guy in the room sort of hearing how all this stuff goes down, because, yeah, like you don't even see that discussed, but that's another very important factor in this whole thing, is that relationship between Disney and EA, right? This is not an EA only thing. Disney is obviously one of the most powerful corporations in the world.
All right, Rich, did you have something you wanted to add here before we go?
Well, one thing I did want to mention, our good friend, Corey Andrus, the other day mentioned that he has taken an even bigger role over there at EA Sports, the global lead for community for FIFA, UFC, and NHL. That's a big deal. It's a big job, and I want to say congratulations to Corey. I've known Corey for a bunch of years now. Quick story. Early days of the Press Row podcast, I mentioned I was playing FIFA and struggling, and I was Everton. He reached out to me, and we had a quick conversation. He wound up putting like a 3-page Google Doc together about what to do, how to rebuild Everton, right? He's like, you know, you got to get rid of these guys. You got to go sign guys like this. You got to set your formation to this. You know, you do these things and you'll be successful. It blew my mind, and it absolutely was amazing. And so what was really cool is, a couple of years ago, I got the chance to bring Corey on to the Out of the Park team. And he was working on all of our licensing stuff, which is a big deal. And he was fantastic at it. And then he went to EA after that. And it's just so awesome to see him continue to succeed. So I wanted to shout out to Corey and say congratulations.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode. We will be back. I think we'll be back. Are we going to do a Thanksgiving week show, Rich? We'll do a show.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so. I mean, come on. It's like the best time of the year to be playing video games, right? You got some time off. You might have, you know, picked up some Black Friday deals, you know, and might be playing something new. So I sure hope so.
Yeah, we'll figure out something for next week, and we'll definitely have an episode for you out there. Thank you again, everyone, and take care till then. Enjoy the holiday if you don't listen to us before it rolls around.
If you text Press Row to 727272, you get a free one-night game rental from Redbox. You know, video games are super fun, and they're super expensive. And once you bust open that plastic, you're stuck with them. And that's why Redbox lets you try out the hottest new games risk-free. Right now, you can rent Middle-Earth, Shadow of War, Destiny 2, NBA 2K18, and more. So just text Press Row to 727272 for a free one-night game rental. Redbox, the smarter way to watch and play. The offer expires December 31st, 2017, subject to additional terms. Charges apply for additional nights. Payment card required. If you're not in Text Club, Redbox will send you an additional text with an invite to join their recurring alerts. Message and data rates may apply. For terms, visit redbox.com/textclub, and for the privacy policy, visit redbox.com/privacy.